Welcome to StablePod, the podcast that explores the exciting world of decentralized systems and beyond. Join us as we delve into the limitless possibilities of decentralized governance, decentralized finance, and decentralized organizations with the most creative and innovative minds in the space. We'll hear from trailblazers who are building, shaping, and maintaining the future of these decentralized systems. From DAOs to NFTs, DeFi to Web3, we cover it all on StablePod. Alrighty, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of StablePod. I'm your host, Juan Esquivel. I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Gustav Ehrentoft. How are you feeling today, Gustav?
Very good, and very excited about our conversation with Spark and Phoenix Lab.
Today's episode is a little bit different. We're switching things up. We now have two guests on the show. Our first guest is Nadia Alvarez, former Growth Core Unit at MakerDAO, now COO and co-founder at Phoenix Labs. Our second guest is Sam McPherson, former Protocol Engineering Core Unit at MakerDAO, and now co-founder and CEO at Phoenix Labs. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
It's good to be here.
Thanks.
How about we start things off by providing an overview for the listeners of these various names and entities that are involved. I know to some it might be confusing. There's Phoenix Labs, Spark Protocol, Spark Land, Spark SubDAO. Sam, you want to kick things off?
Yeah, sure. So I guess let's start with there's MakerDAO, and people probably know that the most at this stage. So previously, yes, as you said, I worked under protocol engineering as a core developer. But since then, a lot of the teams that were under core units under MakerDAO have been sunset over the past couple of months. And all these people, you know, some have left, but some have stuck around. And they're basically everybody's going out into their own companies right now. So the company that Nadia and I have formed is called Phoenix Labs, and we are a smart contract dev shop that is actively contributing to the Spark protocol. But Spark protocol and Spark DAO is a part of Maker. It's part of the Maker ecosystem. It's a DAO, and people are free to contribute to it, make proposals, and it's open to everybody. So that would be the main distinction I would draw here.
And also there's Spark Lend, right, as part of Spark Protocol.
Yeah, Spark Lend is the premier product that that Spark DAO has put out. It's an advanced lending market where users can do things such as cross collateralization, take out crypto short positions, things that Maker under the CDP system didn't cater to. But it also is connected to Maker's as a first class citizen to be able to borrow directly from Maker in the same way that a CDP a user with a CDP can do previously.
Awesome, that's exciting. Before we fully jump into Spark protocol itself, I'd love to hear how Phoenix Labs kind of came to be. I know there was Crimson Cluster before this. There was all that early discussion before that initial proposal went live. I believe it was February of this year. I'd love to kind of hear more about like what the motivations were, you know, those conversations behind the scenes in terms of why you wanted to launch Spark Protocol.
Yeah, sure. So let's see. This the idea for this started, I would say, summer of last year, just identifying that DAI users, people who are borrowing, opening CDPs and stuff like that, there's this demand in the market for these advanced features that lending markets, that over the past couple of years have been built into these advanced lending markets. So the idea was basically to provide what we know as valid use cases for users, provide this in a way that really gives them first class access to use DAI in the way that they want. So the first product, Spark Lend, this was seen as a pretty low hanging fruit that we wanted to do first. And so we just put up a proposal. When was that? Yeah, that was around February. I guess we did that announcement for a proposal. And Maker governance holders seemed to agree. So we attach this as a D3M. This is more the legacy where Maker Core is lending out to the Spark Lend market. But this will transition into the SubDAO framework eventually. So we're kind of in this interim period. But yeah, Sparkblend was viewed as the low hanging fruit that made a lot of sense. And as I think people can see, we are now, Sparkblend is now a top 25 protocol by TVL, all in the span of, we launched in May. So yeah, it's been about coming up on 5 months now. So yeah, very quick growth. Things are going well.
Yeah, I would also like to add something very interesting that we have been working with Sam, like together, but not together for a while now, because he was part of the protocol engineering core unit, and I was part of growth. And we have been always talking about how to improve Maker usability, not just like from a conceptual point of view, but like also like thinking about a product for the users. So I think we start talking about this before summer of last year. Like perhaps it's an idea that has been there floating around for a while now. But I think that it was during XCC that we started like drafting a plan and thinking about, okay, let's do this a reality. So yeah, it was interesting because it was like how from a business perspective, like growth and all that, and a technical point of view, we just like joined forces and thought about this Spark universe.
So was this before Endgame? Because when Endgame was initially laid out, it kind of gave room for this idea of an ecosystem actor, right? Like this idea that, oh, I can now detach myself from MakerCore and, you know, spin up our own thing and then service the DAO directly. Or was this already like an idea with Crimson Cluster and these other like ideas you had, Sam? Are you already trying to find a way to kind of connect everything within MakerCore, even before Endgame was kind of laying the groundwork for what ecosystem actors would become? Is that a fair assessment?
I think Endgame gave us like the tools to work on this, because before Endgame, we were kind of isolated by core units. So, you know, we had a core unit just like focusing on the development and protocol engineering and technical stuff. We had a core unit focused on the growth and marketing. And with Endgame, the proposal is just let's forget about these silos and just like create companies that can provide services to Maker. So it just like was the way to enable us to work on this.
Yeah, totally. I know that initial proposal, there was, you know, it wasn't all like everyone was fully on board at the start. I'd love to hear more about like what that transition looked like for you guys. I know some people were like, oh, you're still part of core units. You know, how are we actually going to get Phoenix Lab up and running? I'm just curious to hear more about like that entire process and how you guys navigated that and some of the learnings you took along the way.
Yeah. So as Nadia said, like Nadia and I have always been like very product focused, like wanting to improve the Maker ecosystem for DAI holders. Like, so really we like through this past couple years working in Maker and now in the larger ecosystem, it's just figuring out the best way to go about that. So previously we were doing it under the core unit system. But once Maker holders indicated that they want to switch to Endgame and have people work in this new structure, we just figured out the best way to go about doing this, to continue on with what we want to do, which is support the Maker ecosystem in the best way that we can. So yeah, it wasn't too hard of a transition, because the structure is actually fundamentally a lot better in my view. The core unit structure, I think it was a good first attempt. But like as Nadia said, it was very siloed. So like having this, there was no formal structure for working between teams, really. So like we were just kind of doing the best we could, but it was kind of, there'd be like pushback within governance and stuff like that sometimes for particular things. And it just wasn't an optimal structure. So the Endgame has, you know, it's designed to help facilitate this, because, you know, Maker holders want growth and innovation within the protocol. So this structure is ultimately, it was just a very natural fit. we discovered that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think like, I think the in-game plan must be one of the most criticized things within all of DeFi. But it also sounds like it kind of like gave you the tools to actually be able to potentially, you know, create something which was not really like possible before. What have been like some of the most like difficult things for you guys to navigate? Because I mean, I don't know if you guys have been against the endgame plan at some point, but I don't know if you even have anything that you feel like have been like conflicting for you guys. But what have been some of the things that have been like more problematic in this transition?
No, I would say that it is like the biggest challenge is that you have to create your own way to do things, because the endgame itself, an idea, a proposal with an objective, but it doesn't have a recipe. So it doesn't establish how you can do that. You have to come with that. And I think that is like perhaps like the most interesting part of all this. At least it's the part that I enjoy the most, because the end game established that you have to create an ecosystem actor and provide services to the DAO. And the end game also talks about sub DAOs, and that's it. And then you have to like fill out all these blank spaces on how to do it. So, and that is what I love about Phoenix Labs, is that we're constantly thinking on, okay, if that's the objective, if that's the final goal, how can we do it? So we just like think about it, present proposals, and just like we want to work on it, we want to do it. So we are like helping Maker on creating and establishing all these processes so other ecosystem actors can come up and like do the same. So I think that is like, at least for us, the most challenging part of all this, that we have been creating all the processes and thinking about the best way to do this, which is fun.
I guess it really added kind of like an entrepreneurial element to getting a budget from Maker, right? Where before, I think some of the criticism was that we saw a lot of handouts in the core unit model, right? Where maybe like the, I think like, oversights were like a little less in some of the topics, right? Where now it seems like you actually really have to bring something to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now, like, yeah, I think that was the problem with core units, and perhaps this is something that other DAOs are experiencing now, and is that a core units kind of feel like you are an employee of a DAO which doesn't exist. And in that sense, ecosystem actors are companies. So you just present a proposal to a protocol, you can do X, Y, Z, and you need X resources to be able to do that. And that's it. But like you have deliverables and you're responsible of like doing that thing that you promised. So I think that's good for a DAO structure. I mean, if you're going to be decentralized, you cannot think about having employees. You need service providers with a specific goal in mind and objectives.
Yeah, obviously you start to see this trend now across DAOs, right? With service providers, you know, the growth of service providers. But I think Maker takes it a step further by introducing incentives baked into sub DAO tokens, which I think is very, very interesting. And obviously there's still a lot to be seen and to be decided in terms of what that actually looks like. I want to touch that on that a little bit more further ahead of the conversation, but I want to now transition into Spark Protocol itself. I'm curious to hear, you know, what is the latest in terms of protocol updates? You know, what are you guys working on at the moment? What are you heads down, you know, busy shipping?
Yeah. So what we're focused on right now is scaling up the multi-chain process. So we are big believers that the Ethereum will more and more convert into a settlement layer, or just like where whales transact as the gas price are kind of low right now, but we don't think this will continue indefinitely. So what we want to do is have Spark Lend instances deployed on all major L2s and sidechains, so that users are able to use these tools and not have to pay a fortune. So like my first experience into DeFi back in when it was 2018, started using it. I think like most people, Maker was really the only thing available at the time. And that experience of like opening up a CDP with the old interface, rocking interface, it was great.
It's giving us all nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah, the conversion of Ethpath and all that kind of stuff. So that experience and not having to pay like a fortune for that, like to just, you know, take out a small loan and die and mess around with it, I think that was super invaluable for getting new people into the ecosystem. So having the gas price, you know, having to spend $1,000 to open a CDP or wherever else in DeFi, it's just, it's not going to bring new users in who are interested and curious. So yeah, we think it's very, very important to be present on these scaling solutions so that we can still give new users this experience and really get people enchanted with DeFi.
In your initial proposal, you outlined Spark fixed rates. I'm curious to hear more about where you guys are at with that in the process.
Yeah, so let me step back a bit then. So like Spark itself, is you can think of it more like an amalgamation of protocols that are connected to Maker's liquidity. So Sparklend is just the first instance of this, but eventually we want like this to be open to everybody. So you've got your new and amazing protocol. Maybe it's lending, maybe it's the DEX, maybe it's fixed rates, or cross-chain transport, or whatever. And what we want to do as Phoenix Labs is just facilitate that integration into accessing DAI's unmatched liquidity in DeFi. So as part of this fixed rates, yes, we've been talking to several protocols that are working on this. But so us as Phoenix Labs, we will facilitate integration with any of these protocols. And it's really on the protocol to get user demand for these products. And then within the SubDAO framework, it's a completely open playing field. So if you have the best product, just market forces are naturally going to allocate more DAI to your product as you have user demand on the other side. But for the product side, they no longer need to worry about this chicken and egg problem of having to get liquidity, stablecoin liquidity into your protocol right off the bat. Maker can allocate to your protocol and scale it up as you build user demand. So you as a protocol developer and team can just focus on building user demand. And that's really what you should be focused on, right? Not having some farming program on the back end that has to get stable coins into your protocol. Let's use the DeFi Legos and really have this whole thing cohesively grow together.
That's really interesting, Sam, to kind of like allow, basically like anyone to eventually be met with Maker's liquidity. How do you like envision this to be developed over time, both with kind of like, because now you have Sparklend, right? Like if I'm like a third party protocol, would I then be added under the Spark brand in the Spark subDAO, or would I be applying for a separate subDAO? How do I kind of like work with Phoenix Labs and Spark? And also maybe you can also touch a little bit upon like, you know, if we allocate DAI liquidity to a third-party protocol, how does this look like from like a governance and security perspective?
Yeah, okay. So like first, let me say the Spark subDAO is the driver of all of this. So like all we can do is provide some guidance here. So really, if a protocol wants liquidity, this could look like many different things. Maybe they want to operate it under their own brand. I think this is fine. So, and I also think it's fine if they want to white label the product under the Spark subDAO, if the subDAO accepts that. Like, I really think we could just cater to a lot of different solutions here. There doesn't have to be any particular one size fits all. So this, and also say it's still pretty early stages. So what exactly this looks like, I'm not entirely sure at this stage, but I think I'll reiterate that it's not just like Sparklend and then, you know, that's the only lending protocol that would be facilitated under the Spark subDAO. It's in fact the opposite. Really, Spark should be viewed as getting users who want to use stable coins, decentralized stable coins, and use DAI, connected with Maker's liquidity. And so that could be through Sparkland. It could be through some of these next generation lending protocols. It could be through anything. And like that's the main point, is connecting users with what they want to do, not so much about the specific Sparkland instance.
Yeah, I guess the confusion it starts because, as you said, Juan, this is changing so fast. And when we started as Crimson, thinking about Spark, we thought about a product, and we didn't know how that product could be then transformed into a sub-DAO. But now, like little by little, we start to like seeing how Sparkland is just like a product that will live inside of the Spark DAO as like a something bigger as a DAO that can provide liquidity, not just to Sparkland, but to other protocols. And that could be a fixed rate solution, like a third party for fixed rate solution, or like this protocol could think about integrating their solution with the Sparkland. So like the options are like, you have like infinite options on the things that you can do. But of course, everything will be governed by the SPK token holders, and we will have to see all the processes and the decisions that the token holders will take on this to understand like what will be the next steps for the DAO.
Okay, that's really cool. Yeah, I think like what I wanted to get with the question with governance, Sam, was more like I imagine kind of like almost like the initial like collateral onboarding framework in Maker, but instead of onboarding collateral, you're onboarding protocols. And your debt ceilings, instead of like how much you can borrow against one collateral type, will be like the amount of DAI liquidity you push into to third-party protocols. And then, of course, you know, the interest rates will be, you know, the fees you would charge the protocols for receiving that liquidity. Is it something like that would be possible?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how to think about it, I think. So, yeah, instead of the collateral onboarding process, which, by the way, we're still thinking about how best to do that for the Sparkland instance, but yes, it should really be like a recursive structure where you have Maker Core that's doing like very, very high level credit to the sub-DAOs, which will then have their own it's like a mini version of Maker, basically, the sub-DAOs. You can think of it like that. They have their own surplus buffers and then they allocate to various things. So a couple of them are RWA ones. Spark is focused on DeFi. So, but yes, instead of like my one particular asset to be onboarded, and again, potentially could be done through Sparkland. There's so many cool protocols out there, and just allocating in bulk to these different teams and then just ramping it up. Of course, there's risk considerations that need to be taken into account. But like in general, as these protocols gain traction, Maker can just scale with it, or the sub-DAO rather. So that's kind of the idea here. Because then you're betting on everybody basically, and that's great.
Sam, would the integration of other Maker ecosystem actor protocols, for example, Chronicle, would that look about the same in terms of maybe the governance process or the decision making process for that? Because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Sparkland has stated that Chronicle would be like a redundant Oracle that would potentially be onboarded. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, we're working with both Chainlink and Chronicle to provide the oracles, and we're also actively looking at solutions where these feeds can be made redundant, especially on mainnet with a lot of capital at stake. So, the redundant oracle feed is just one of the potential solutions that are being looked at right now. Us again as Phoenix Labs, we are helping as best we can to do these integrations especially during this interim period before the sub-DAO is launched. But ultimately, it is the SPK token holders who are going to decide the direction in the end. And so, yeah. And Chronicle is welcome to be a part. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I would just say, like, I think here we're just talking about, like, the possibilities, right? So we know, of course, that, like, you will not be the ones who will be, making those decisions in the end. It's just like really interesting to kind of like see, you know, and explore a thing like this is like the first really of the sub DAOs where you see like a lot of the possibilities that are like, you know, could be possible and a lot of the options kind of like opening up, not just for, you know, people or, you know, teams that have worked closely with Maker over the years, you know, such as yourself or Chronicle, but also a lot of external teams. So I think we just really want to kind of try to paint some of the options for everyone in DeFi, involved in DeFi on the wall here.
Yeah, I would say, go ahead, Nadia.
No, I was just thinking about this collaboration that we're having with Gnosis and the Gnosis ecosystem to launch Spark and Gnosis chain. I think that is like the best example on how Spark is part of the work of different ecosystem actors. And ecosystem actor is just like the fancy maker word to talk about any company. So it has been an interesting process to work with outsiders of Maker, like to achieve this deployment. Because if you think about it, it is the first time that Maker is deploying something outside mainnet. So this was huge for the Maker ecosystem in general. And it was just not having a Spark there. It was just also, it was also having SDAI on a new chain. And having SDAI on Gnosis is, it's super interesting for us because of the reason Sam said, it is more easy for anyone to have access to SDAI on Gnosis than on mainnet. So I think we're seeing on like how all these companies or ecosystem actors can start working with Phoenix Labs or others to like bring more innovation to Maker, which is fantastic.
Yeah, totally. Nadia, I've heard you previously mention that Spark Len offers Maker a chance to reconnect with the end user once again, like more directly. Why is this so important? Why is this such an important thing for you guys?
Oh, well, I think it is because, and I think this idea started after all the years working for the growth team at Maker. And it's because Maker has like a great product, fantastic product. But it's more, it was more like a back-end solution because without a front-end, it was impossible for users to have access to Maker. Everyone thought that, okay, maybe Oasis or like the new SummerFi was part of Maker, and because of that, that was the front end. But well, you guys know that it's not like that. So it was hard to have like a way to showcase the best features of Maker through a front end because we didn't have like a front end to do that. So having a Spark and the Spark front end allow us to like play with all these possibilities that Maker has in the back end and bring it to the users. Of course, we just started like a few months ago, but in the future, we will be able to increase the number of functionalities and things you can do in Spark. And I'm pretty sure with the other sub-DAOs and with like all the things that Maker is doing with real world assets and by having a front end as the one we have with Spark, it will be easier for the Maker ecosystem to have all the like best features that Maker has to offer to the users. And now with this multi-chain strategy implemented, everyone will be able to access to all this. So I think that was the part that Maker never had, or maybe it had in the past. And it was needed just because once you are able like to have a front end with all the services, it's easier for others to adopt these features and it's easier to grow.
Sam, do you have anything to add to that?
No, it was good.
Yeah, I think the competitive advantage is mainly DAI itself, right? And for a long time, Maker, like you said, it was just providing that liquidity and there was no easy way for users to kind of access that. But now with Spark Lend and Spark Protocol more in general, it's going to become just easier and easier for the end user to connect to DAI directly. But obviously, that's just one part of all these other sub-DAOs that are happening, right? There's still a bunch of other things that will continue as is and expand upon, even like the RWAs and such. So I kind of want to touch on Spark as a sub-DAO itself and how it's governed. So for the moment, at least for now, it's primarily driven by Maker core governance, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So So once, when would that transition to a more of a like something you call subbed out governance actually take place? Is it when the farming is completely live? Is it whenever token holders decide? Like, you know, from your point of view, where you're standing, you know, what are the indications of when that will evolve into detaching from MakerCore itself?
I think it will be when the tokens are launched. But that's just my guessing, because we are not involved in the governance design. Like, we are just like helping developing Spark. So I think it will be when the tokens are launched that token holders will come up with a framework and they will start voting for everything that happens inside the Spark DAO.
Yeah, obviously this is very near and dear to us. This is something we're paying close attention to, right, Gustav? Because a lot of it's undefined. I know from what I've read from Rune, it's kind of like he describes subDAOs and especially its governance as kind of this experimental grounds. A lot of it's still kind of up in the air. So I think it'll be something that people should pay close attention to see how it evolves. And if you want to contribute, obviously, you know, jump into the forums. But yeah, I that's my biggest question mark in terms of like, how does subDAO governance actually look like? You know, is it still going to be extremely closely tied to MakerCore? I know that's from all the indications that Rune has stated, he kind of doesn't want that to be the case, right? He wants MakerCore to just be this more static thing, and then subDAOs start doing more experimental growth things.
No, I was going to say that there are like general rules that all subDAOs have to follow and are written in the Atlas and all the scopes that Maker Governance is currently working on. That will be like the base of governance, but then each subDAO will have to come up with like their own Atlas that will depend on the Maker Atlas.
Yeah, so I think like just one thing which I think is like really interesting here is that basically, you know, you as like Phoenix Labs have you know, started kind of like this process with the Spark subDAO. But as you also mentioned, you know, you don't really know what the governance of it will look like. And a lot of it is going to be defined by Maker governance. So you're kind of like putting your trust in the Maker community to be able to basically, you know, set up like a system that would, you know, allow the protocol to be scaled in the best way. This is like a lot of like, you could say like ownership over the protocol that you give up as a founder to be connected to Maker. What is like some of the thought processes here for you? What are like some of the trade-offs? Like, you know, there must of course be like a lot of benefits as well, since this is like a choice you've made, but what kind of like, maybe you can explain a little bit about what the situation looks like on your end.
Great question, Gustav. Yes, of course, we depend on Maker governance. But one of our like main objectives when we thought about creating Phoenix Labs was to like help Maker to evolve. We see a lot of potential, and of course, like you can think that with the same team, we might be able to create a new protocol and be completely independent. And yeah, I completely agree on that. But we wanted to bet on Maker. We think there's a lot of potential, and we want to be part of that.
Yeah, I think that's you know, really like a big comment to you know, both of you for kind of like sticking to that as well, right? So like, maybe we can talk a little bit about like, you know, some of like the like immediate like possibilities, right? Of course, we talked a little bit about like, you know, kind of like the ability to access DAI directly in the protocol. Are there like other things? Because I mean, you guys have probably have had like the biggest growth rate, as you know, I think almost any DeFi protocol, maybe except for, you know, a couple of years ago in the DeFi summer. What has like made you propel to that growth? What kind of like enabled that? Was there anything else than just the DAI liquidity? What kind of like, yeah, made that possible?
Yeah, and I think other protocols should take notice of this, in that really, in terms of available stablecoin liquidity, you can think of it like, especially in this high interest rate environment, it's like the lifeblood of your protocol. If you don't have access to stablecoins, you're basically dead in the water. So precisely because of this requirement to get bootstrapped, Sparks, it's 100% the connection to Maker liquidity that was enabled this rapid growth. And this is not some walled garden. This is open to everybody. So I think this is the big piece. The Spark Lend is the first instance, but it's completely open. So everybody should be paying attention to this. And the earlier you get involved will be the better later on, as you'll be able to, if your product is really what users want, that's the only thing that matters. You'll have access to as much stablecoin liquidity as you need on the other side. Because DAI, outstanding supply of DAI right now, 5.5 billion and still increasing due to the recent DAI savings rate increase. The supply continues to climb in a market where all stablecoin supply has been dropping for the past year. This is a big turnaround. So the size here, 5.5 billion, that is absolutely massive compared to the size of DeFi. So there's basically unlimited capacity to allocate to your protocol here. So this is how it happened.
Yeah, I think that sounds really good. And I mean, I think especially right now, I think, you know, struggling DeFi teams is something we see on almost every corner of crypto Twitter. So yeah, I think that it's definitely something like more people should be putting maybe like more attention into, right? I think it could not just be for survival, but actually, you know, for success. Mm-hmm. I think you know, kind of like the path that you guys have had now, you know, really also kind of proved this thesis, right? And I think just if we look back, I think a lot of people kind of like doubted Maker as a whole, right? I think especially when we were in this position where there was a little bit too much USDC in the PSM and no real way to get it out. But it seems like you guys have been able to kind of like open the floodgates on this one. And I think, like, you know, it must be something that other teams should be able to replicate as well.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the USDC stuff, so we can't claim credit for that part. There's other awesome teams that are working in some of the other sub-DAOs. This would be more the real world asset ones where they've been heavily focused on getting that yield to the Maker protocol. But there's just a lot of big things going on in Maker all around, I would say. I agree with the sentiment.
Sam, I can't have you on without asking about the Aave V3 fork. What's the latest with that agreement? Is it just like Sparkland just has to continue to develop and then we'll start to actually see that agreement come to, you know, fruition in terms of like, you know, paying them?
Yeah, so the agreement's already running right now. So the revenue is coming into the Spark sub-DAO. And as agreed by both MakerDAO and Aave DAO, there will be quarterly payments. So the first one for that should actually be going out soon because we've just passed the third quarter. So it's not our team that's taking care of the payments. So I think that's just being taken care of right now. But yeah, that agreement's in effect. It's been agreed by both parties, and it's I think it's a good example of collaboration that can be done between the two DAOs.
Yeah. So any changes to that agreement would have to go through Maker governance, correct?
Yeah. If I'm not wrong, I think it was included in one of the scopes because Maker wants to go in that direction where like the ecosystem is growing through these cooperation and revenue share agreements. So the idea is to improve on how we are doing that. And of course, like perhaps the first one wasn't like the best attempt. It has a lot of things to improve, but it was just that, like the first time. And we hope that for the next cooperations that include a rev share agreement, it's going to be better because it's supposed to be included in the scopes and it will be like completely like automated by Maker Core.
Yeah, I think we have seen in the past like a balancer having quite a bit of success with these like balancer friendly forks, right? Of course, here you're kind of like doing it the opposite way than rather going and asking permission on Aave. You're just kind of like doing it and kind of like giving it as like part of like the deployment. But yeah, I mean, I know that there's been like a little bit of like, you know, I think like tension around this specific instance, right? But I think, like, in general, it's something that we should be, you know, happy to see more of, right, rather than less. So I don't know how you guys felt with this, a little bit like hostility being directed towards you.
Yeah, you know, there's always going to be a bit of hostility when you're competitors. So I think it's understandable. And as Nadia said, there was could have been some better things done from the beginning, but we're iterating, and there was a new proposal that was put forward to remedy some of the issues that came up, and that's passed. So I'm hoping we can move past it and just continue, you know, building the world we want to see, which is positive sum, paying, you know, open source developers and the community for the public goods, which is open source code that everybody benefits from. So yeah, we're very interested in general in all the innovative solutions going on here in the public goods funding space. So yeah, some of like the experiments that Optimism's been doing with like retroactive public goods funding and stuff. We'd like to see the experimentations going on right now, and we're when we see what works, what scales, we would like to contribute to that whole ethos.
Yeah, I love it. Working together, you'll go further. I want to transition into Endgame, just to touch on it briefly. So with these we kind of touched on how ecosystem actors and these incubated protocols will integrate or interoperate. I'm curious how, if you guys have an understanding of your interpretation of the Atlas, or, you know, what you've read so far, how do sub-DAOs actually interoperate? So maybe like how Sakura DAO would, you know, maybe where would they touch point with Spark, if at all?
Well, like there are 4, 5, 6 of DAOs, and two of them are more like DeFi oriented, including Spark. The other two are more real world asset oriented, and the other two are like governance sub DAOs. How are we going to interact? I think that's not completely clear. I mean, we have like the central point of Maker, because Maker is the one like giving us like the game rules and also liquidity. But I think between us, the idea is not that as much as like collaborate, but offer different things to users. So the objective is to have like a clear like ethos inside each one of these sub-DAOs. So if you like DeFi, if you like the DeFi ethos and you're very into that, you know that you should go to the Spark forum, and in the Spark Discord you will find people like you. But if you're more like a TradFi guy and you want to know more about real world assets and T-bills and that stuff, you know that you can go to these other two sub-DAOs that are more into that. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Endgame started. And it was because at some point the Maker Discord was an insane place to be, because you had like the crypto guys complaining against the guys talking about real world assets, and that it's impossible. It is impossible to have like a conversation and something good that can come up after that. So I think with these sub DAOs and a clear like objective inside each one of these sub DAOs, it will be like easier to come up with new things.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, the old model, because I wanted to ask. Arun has previously said that the shift to Endgame was primarily, or, you know, it was driven by seeing certain actors in the old governance model. Now I'm speaking more directly about the governance itself, right? Certain actors, you know, maybe consolidating power too much. So my question to you guys is just to get your take on, you know, how do we combat service provider entrenchment? Like, how do we make sure there's not that gatekeeping? And maybe the way Endgame has been laid out is going to mitigate that with the sub-DAO tokenomics, right? There's still a lot of that to be seen. Do you guys have a take on this?
I think it is through the constitution. At least that is like the idea that the Endgame has. The problem with Maker before was that everything was decided by people without clear rules. So it was just like there was a small group deciding everything that happened in Maker. I think what the endgame wants to propose is that instead of having people deciding on these things, you just have a clear set of rules inside a constitution, and you like just go to that constitution to know what to do. So that is like one of the main objectives that the endgame has, and that is why the endgame is also proposing to bring a lot of AI tools to automate these decisions. So instead of having, again, this small group of people deciding, you are just like letting AI to decide based on the rules that you proposed in the constitution.
Yeah, I realize when I ask some of these questions, I'm asking you to speculate, but I think it's good to hear from you guys that are, you know, closer to these things that are developing, just to kind of see how you are kind of like how you expect them to develop. And so I wanted to ask, you know, I believe phase one was for the broader endgame launch was the rebrand, which is around the beginning of next year. And then phase two, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is where you guys would come in, right, with the sub-DAOs. And this is kind of where you're more affected or you play a part. So I wanted to ask, how do you, like, what's the ideal scenario for how phase two is launched? Like, what is a great scenario of like how the SBK token gets launched? What are we looking for? What are things that we can like look out for to see that things are actually developing the way we kind of intend them to?
Well, it's funny because actually, no, we are not that involved in that. Like, we are involved in the development of Spark, so it will be the same as now. All the development of the tokens and the farmings and what happens with that. There are other ecosystem actors working on that, and we expect to have like new ecosystem actors or new providers involved in all this. And I think that is one of also of the things that works when you want like to avoid to have just like a small group of people controlling something. Like we are not working on that. So we have no idea. We don't have control on that. Actually, yeah, it is pretty clear for us. Like, our objective is just on the technical aspect, on development and research around the Spark. But all the other aspects of the DAO and the tokens and the farming and the launch, it is managed by other teams.
No, I'm glad you pointed that out because maybe to some people, they don't even realize that that's the case, right? The SBK token is being farmed currently. The pre-launch, pre-farming is happening. And then the tokens will get into those hands of those people. And then whatever governance looks like, whatever, you know, it develops, once that's fully launched, you know, it's to be seen. So what you guys are saying is you're over here, you're just busy building. You're not even, you know, contemplating, you're not involved in this whole arena over here, which I think is great to hear for some people that are kind of worried or...
We're, you know, not involved, and it's because, yeah, we're a service provider helping Maker to build Spark, but we are not, I mean, Spark is not our product, and we are not defining the future of Spark and all that.
No, I think that made me more bullish Spark. So awesome. Yeah, we'll be looking forward to that airdrop. I did want to call out the time, and I did want to just ask one more question. Whenever we have old Maker people, well, you know, Maker Mafia and such on the show, I like to ask them what their fondest memories were from their time at Maker. Maybe when you guys were core units. I'd love to hear about some of those war stories, as they call them.
War stories. I think my time at Maker was great. I was actually one of the later people to join in, and I actually was never part of the Maker Foundation. So I joined in as a developer to the DAO. So I was a little bit unique in that regard. But I would say my favorite thing was just after the pandemic was ending. ECC, I actually wasn't even involved in crypto long before that. So it was like my first conference to go to, and just meeting everybody in the team in person, just the best experience of my life, getting basically the giga brains of the entire industry. Just a very live and interesting, fulfilling occupation to be involved in. So that was, I think, my fondest was the in-person meetups.
I heard those offsites were kind of crazy, so let's just leave it at that.
I know Nadia's that must have been bringing me onto Maker, because she was actually the one who pulled me into working at Maker.
Yeah, that's crazy, huh? I think about my memories, I don't know, like, because I have like very like amazing memories from our time in the foundation with Gustav and being part of Greg's team. That was crazy and amazing, because you know, DAI was nothing at the time. Like, actually DAI didn't even exist, because it was Sai, and we were all just thinking on how we could like position something as DAI in the market, in all the different markets. And it was before DeFi, so that was an incredible experience, like be part of the whole thing. And then with the core units, I think like the nicest thing was when, like, in one of the offsites, because we were not just with the growth team, but with the other team members from other core units. And that was incredible, like having these. And I think that is why I'm a believer on this ecosystem actor structure, because it is important to have different minds working on something, not just like technical people and marketing people, but having them all together, you can like create a lot of amazing stuff by working together.
No, yeah, I'm glad you called that out. It's something Gustav always says to us as a team. He's like, you know, I just love getting all these people from all walks of life coming together, and then we see the final product and we're just proud, right? And I think that's a testament to what he experienced at Maker Foundation and MakerDAO more generally. So we love it. All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time. Sam and Nadia, this has been fun. We'll let you guys go.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Gustav. We'll see you guys on the next episode of StablePod.